Welcome to the Ninja Lane Podcast. In this episode, we talk about MOA 13 and how MSI has changed the competition. Bitcoins, is it physical or is it virtual? And Mass Effect, the trilogy, and you need to play it. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay. Last year, around this time, I competed in MOA 2012.
Oh, that's right. And that was an adventure.
Yeah, that was the must overclock ambient or something like that, right?
Mostly overclocked animals. What does that stand for?
The Master Overclocking Arena from MSI.
But of course, now I know last year this was a huge, huge commitment for you.
It was, partially from the pocketbook and partially from just time investment.
I might still have burns on my hands from that one.
Yeah, liquid nitrogen splashing everywhere, kind of getting a little burns here and there. Yeah. I want to say it was eye-opening. It was a huge undertaking. It was also immensely fun.
And I'd like to point out that we documented that quite a bit, both via podcast and through articles on the site. Go back if you'd like to see what we're doing, and I definitely recommend checking out the gallery.
Now, MOA 2013 is a little bit different, and I've already put in my bid, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But MSI kind of listened to, I don't know, maybe it was some of my ramblings or some of the ramblings from the forum, but they listened to the people trying to compete and realized that not everybody has the most high-end hardware to be able to compete.
So if I remember correctly, last year you were very restricted, of course, to products by the manufacturer.
Well, and that's the way it is this time. So you have to use motherboard and video card from MSI, which, you know, it's their competition. They can make that sort of restriction.
And that's fair, but didn't they last year limit it to a really specific run of products also?
Well, not necessarily. The run of products was to remain competitive.
Oh.
So at the time that I competed, Ivy Bridge wasn't out yet, so you couldn't use Ivy Bridge. So the best processor you could get was a 2011, so I competed with a 3930K
right
under liquid nitrogen. The video card choice was, that was key. That was make or break for anybody. And if you had a 7970 Lightning, you were in the best position.
And that's why we have a 7970 that you hear us talk about all the time here at the labs.
Yes, and I have not gotten rid of it. And it's a good thing because you can't get them now. And that is still the premier card that you're going to want to have to compete in 2013.
That is, unless you can afford a Titan.
Oh, nope. Actually, Titan has been excluded from round one.
Oh, now that is a big change. So it's not about the deep pocketbooks necessarily.
Not necessarily. It is about capturing the overclockers that are dedicated to overclocking. So it's going to be the people that already have MSI gear, either that have already competed and haven't gotten rid of their stuff, or are actively binning MSI hardware. So they've bought several Lightnings off of people, or they've had them before, or...
Well, before we speculate on ideal hardware choices and talk about that, let's talk a little bit more about how the MOA is structured this year. Because I know you said there were some pretty major changes to even the way the competition was set up.
Right. This year, they have divided it up into two categories. There's a Category A and a Category B.
Okay.
Category A is your traditional overclocker, deep pockets, I have everything under the sun.
So unlimited with... the obvious exception of the Titan.
Exactly. Now, Category B, I'm going to call this the cheap chips.
Okay.
So they have implemented a processor restriction, so you can use a 3570K.
Wow, it's a very affordable processor.
Right. Well, and there's an AMD equivalent as well. I'm going to talk about the Intel ones because that's what I would have had anyway. The video card restriction is a GTX 650 Ti Boost, or you can use anything under that.
So that's a fairly new card. But it's not that expensive.
It's not. The difference is the cards that they've limited you to are not the traditional overclocker cards. So, like, for instance, I have a Hawk Edition card, and it has a larger PWM, voltage controls, and also a Nolan 2 BIOS on it. But that one's been excluded from this competition because it's supposed to be affordable hardware.
Makes sense. Well, it keeps the more serious guys out of your backyard if you're trying to compete at that lower level, like I would compete.
Right. It also has the advantage to capture anybody that's going to be modding their cards. So you might be able to buy three of them, put on a, you know, a zombie card, basically something with a larger PWM, solder that into the board, and then do manual voltage controls.
Well, that sounds interesting, but is there a cooling restriction as well?
There's not. Not that I've seen, at least. So anyone that's going to be liquid nitrogen is available in there, but it's still cheap chips. So it's mostly going to be the air and water guys that are going to be competing in here.
I guess that means I can get my Lightning back, right?
No.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the structure. Now, I know that we competed as a team more or less last year, and that you had partners that you worked with also early on trying to get the right equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, how big are the teams?
Well, the qualifying teams, it can be as big as you want, but it's really just going to be single people, single overclockers. The finals, the current rumor is only one person goes, so it's going to be a solo team. Whereas last year it was a two-man team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I watched the live stream, and some teams had both people working at the same time. Other teams just had, like, one guy pouring LN2 while someone is off getting a snack or something like that. So I think the MSI people have decided that it can be a solo act. They can save a little bit of travel money, and it also makes it look like that person's doing more.
Well, yeah, it's good for coverage, and also, you know, you're only really rewarding one top clocker then.
Right. So in terms of the structure, we have, I already talked about the two categories.
Mm-hmm.
We also have two rounds.
Okay.
So we have the first round, this is divided into regions. So you have the U.S. region, European region, Asia-Pacific region, and then the cheap chips region. They're all kind of together.
Right.
So in the first round, the top overclocker in the first qualifying round gets a free ticket, no questions asked, to the finals.
So if you're the best of the best, you only have to compete once for your spot.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Get the top guns out right away and then have sort of a loser's bracket, if you will.
Yeah, and that would be round two. Now, in round two, there are three spots available in each region that will get a ticket to MOA.
So how many regions are there?
There's going to be three regions plus the cheap chips. So
if I'm mathing, that's 3-4 first round, and is that 11 second round? So 15 total?
15 total. Now, the clevet there is that the European region gets two people to go in the first round, whereas in the cheap chips, it's compete to move on to the semifinals.
Okay, because that makes more sense, because I was seeing 4-12. Okay. I still don't get it, but that's all right.
Well, if we go to HardwareBot, they have a nice little tier structure that explains how that works. But
perfect. Okay. Well, we'll set a note, of course, for you guys in the show notes, and you can go check that out. And more importantly, follow and cheer on your favorite region. So this year you're competing. I know. What category did you decide to attack?
Well, it was a tough choice because, as you know, I have the GTX 650 Ti boost.
Right.
And it actually overclocks quite well. I also have some really high-end processors from last year, thanks to MOA.
Right.
But I didn't have a 3570K.
Oh.
And the problem I had last year was that I didn't have a board that would support a 3570K or even a 3770K from MSI. I still don't have one.
So it sounds like you went with basically the same hardware as last year?
I did. I pulled the Big Bang off the shelf.
Nice.
And I pulled out the 7970 Lightning and matched it all up with my 3960X.
Okay, now is that the same processor you used last year also?
No, it's not the same processor. I used 3930Ks last year.
Oh, that's right.
Because under liquid nitrogen, those processors clocked higher than my super expensive processor.
So why switch?
I switched because I'm not doing liquid nitrogen this year. I'm going to... Just doing water cooling, because my plan is to just try to get to the semifinals.
Okay.
And the reason being is I don't have any of the hardware to compete. Now, we have different benchmarks for Category A. We're actually using 3DMark, FireStrike, SuperPi, and Cinebench, which is one of your favorites from way back when.
Right. Now, FireStrike is a new one for me.
Yeah, that's the new 3DMark. It doesn't even have a number after it.
Oh, that's why it sounds familiar. Okay.
Yeah, and it's a really challenging benchmark, but it's a very, very similar to 3D Mark 11. You know, you have a couple of video card benchmarks, you have a physics one, and then you have a combined benchmark.
So you'll be running water cooling with a chiller?
No, not a chiller, partially because I don't gain anything off of that with this particular processor.
Oh, okay.
So I'm clocking as close as I can to 5 gigahertz, and I have a little bit of room to go. And that will get me a fairly decent SuperPi score and also a fairly decent Cinebench score, which is multi-threaded, so the more cores I have, the better off I'll be. With FireStrike, it's mostly video card, and of course the people that are going to be getting the top score are going to have a 3770 that will run 7 gigahertz and a 7970. The people that are going to be very top scorers in this competition are going to have the liquid nitrogen and all that stuff. My plan, as I mentioned before, just to get the semis.
So you really just need to make that first 15 then?
Yep, the first 15, or the first 50% if more than 15 people enter. And by the looks of it, we're almost halfway through the competition and there's 3 people in the Americas region.
Well, that doesn't sound like a good showing, but I know that last year we felt the same way. And at the last minute, a lot of sandbaggers clocked in with some pretty impressive scores.
Yeah, well, last year they also had that cutoff. So halfway through the competition, they would basically take the top scores and were allowed to continue on. I was lucky enough to get into that first round. So the main reason I'm going for the second, I'm just trying to get to the semis, is partially because I don't have the hardware to compete and I don't want to go out and buy the hardware so I can be competitive.
Well, right, with Haswell around the corner, it's a tough time to be buying hardware.
Right, and with the competition, the second round happens after Computex, so it's in July, and Haswell should be out by then. So that's the hardware for that is a little unknown right now, and if they are going to bring in Haswell, then I might as well go and buy myself a board, get myself a couple of good chips, and go for broke.
Yeah, sounds like it. Looking at the site, I see you've submitted some scores already. If I'm not mistaken, you're currently sitting at third place?
Yep, third place right now. I expect to stay there for at least another week, and I still have some tweaks to do with the benches that I am running, and if I don't lose my DisplayPort cable, I should be able to tweak some more FireStrike and get a higher PhysX score in there and kind of squeeze out some more.
You're talking about making some tweaks. Now, what kind of tweaks will improve your score? That sounds interesting.
Well, with the 7970 Lightning, there are several things that you can tweak in terms of voltage. Also, the memory speed, memory voltage, and also the power slider, which is something with the catalyst drivers.
Now, does this require a specific or one of those custom BIOSes and custom control panel-y software thingies?
Well, the MSI Afterburner, there's two versions of it. There's the one that you and I can just download from the website, and Right. Then there's the special one that they can, you can write to a special person at MSI and say, hey, can I get the unlocked version of Afterburner? Now, that is only going to be beneficial for people under like water chiller or liquid nitrogen, because that will be pushing more voltage into the chip and you got to keep it cool, otherwise it's going to fry. In my case, I will be able to use the off-the-shelf Afterburner because the voltage that I'll be playing with is going to be plenty to get the clocks that I'm after. It's just a matter of tuning those clocks and then also tuning the system memory to get the best physics score. Because, there's minute little changes you can make in there to get even more points.
So let's talk about deadlines and dates. So I know the first round has begun. So when can we expect to see that first cut happen?
This is the interesting thing about MOA 13 versus MOA 12. MOA 12, they had regions competing at different months.
Uh-huh.
So the Americas was first, and then the Europeans, and then the Asia Pacific. I believe that was the order. This year, it started May 1st and goes to May 31st, and all the regions, Category A and Category B, are competing at the exact same time.
Oh, well, that's interesting. That shortens things up, but it also keeps the competition very real-time.
Right. And since Computex is going to happen in between those two, you get a chance to see some of the new hardware coming out. And as a reviewer, I'm going to be there. Again, this will be awesome. I'll be able to see some of the new hardware coming out firsthand.
Awesome.
I'll be able to talk to MSI directly.
So you expect to maybe switch hardware in the middle even without Haswell.
Right. Well, that was my plan. If I can get to the semis, then I should be able to get some good Haswell hardware. There's a rumor that they might allow Titan to be in the semifinals, which, that's a $1,000 video card, so maybe I can compete there, maybe not. It's hard to say.
Yeah, that's a big commitment, although it is a pretty awesome card.
Now, in the second round, that is in July, July 1st to July 31st. And after that, they haven't announced when the finals are going to be, but I suspect they will be in September.
It all sounds very exciting, and I know you're looking forward to continuing to compete. But with two categories, really, which one is the one to watch? It sounds like it might actually be the Category B.
I'm going to say Category B is going to be the fiercest competition because of the variance in video card hardware that's allowed And it's really going to be down to who can get the highest clock out of their processor and who might be able to get the luckiest bin of their cheap chips video card.
Well, in theory, a lot easier to get in and get involved. So with that in mind, I'd encourage you out there, if you haven't had an opportunity to get out there, it might be a fun chance to compete. And you can compete, of course, along with our Ninja Lane team. We'd always love to have you. Or simply follow along with Red Max here as he continues to try to make that cut for the best of in the second round.
Bitcoins are back in the news.
Bitcoins?
Yeah, it's, what is it, that cryptocurrency?
Oh, yeah, okay. So I think I'm a little familiar with this, but what's a Bitcoin?
A Bitcoin is, as I mentioned, a cryptocurrency. So it is money based off of, well, the thought of having money, so to speak.
Okay.
So there's a cryptographer that had created a way to create money or mine for money. So you would use like a CPU or a GPU nowadays and mine for these Bitcoins by encrypting stuff. There's some stuff that happens in the back end that I'm not totally sure on, but if you run a bunch of video cards for a long time, you'll get Bitcoins.
Okay, so that sort of reminds me of like Folding at Home, for example, or those other crowdsourced movements where they're mining for specific data.
That's very, very similar. Like SETI, for instance, you know, you have a stream coming from space and you're trying to figure out if there's an alien signal in there. So you're using your GPU power to look through everything and analyze every little bit of the data.
So now that's a little bit of a far cry from creating money out of nothing, which is what it sounds like a Bitcoin is.
Well, if you think about how the U.S. economy and world economy is now, there's nothing really backing it, right?
Well, I mean, we were gold standard, and the U.S. is famously now
off the gold standard.
Yeah, doing their best to ruin the global economy, according to many.
Yes, and by printing their own money, which we might be able to talk about a little bit later.
Right.
But the idea is that the country has value, and that value is really where the money comes from. So
right.
Instead of being tied to gold, where 1 ounce of gold might be worth, you know, $40,000, mm-hmm. instead of, what is it, $600 or something like that now, it's a virtual a way of accounting.
Well, of course. So you've got the good nature and, of course, the reliability that the United States, at least, will always be here. Mm-hmm. So there is some inherent value in the money. And that's true of every country, excluding, of course, some of the crashes we've had recently.
Right. And the nice thing about that is that the money that you have in your pocket is always going to have value. It's always going to have the same value. Now, when you go to another country, that there's an exchange rate. Like in Taiwan, for instance, at one point, one U.S. dollar was worth 33 new Taiwanese dollars.
Right.
Now, I think it's more like 29. So that exchange rate would, that's how you can have the same buying power in another country. Now, in Taiwan, for instance, I, at the height of it, when it was worth $33, I could buy like a number one Big Mac meal for $1.50.
Nice.
So in here, it's like $6.50. That is the power of the money going from one place to another.
So not a bad explanation, at least a simple economic explanation of money and value. A Bitcoin doesn't have that backing. So how does it have value?
Well, if you ask anyone in the U.S. government, it has no value. It is not money.
Well, that's good. No taxes, right?
No taxes. Now, the reason that it has value within the Bitcoin community is because people have assigned a value to it. Now, you can convert Bitcoins into U.S. dollars. That's how you can buy gas with Bitcoins. That is assuming that, like a stock, you are transferring ownership to somebody else.
So there are only so many Bitcoins, in theory. So that tracks the value also,
right.
I would think.
And the how many Bitcoins have been found is one of those things that's known by the mining circle. And that is how value is assigned to them. Because there was an article saying that, you know, 3 years ago, you needed 10,000 Bitcoins to buy $25 worth of pizza. Well, now, one Bitcoin is worth $92.
And like a stock, of course, that's assuming that someone wants to buy it.
Right.
So there's sort of a fair market value that must fluctuate, probably depending on how they're being sold.
Right, or stolen out of the banks, or crashed because of a server going down.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me. I, of course, hear a lot about viruses, and there are some special viruses that are designed simply to steal bitcoins, or what I've heard called a bitcoin algorithm.
It's a long string of a bitcoin, or a part of a bitcoin, because that one bitcoin is worth a certain amount, but then when people mine them, they're certain fractions of that bitcoin.
Interesting. So you talked about buying a pizza, and I'm a little intrigued. I realize we're not in exactly the grand mecca of technology here at the Ninja Lane. How does one go about using these bitcoins, assuming I could get some by mining with my equipment, which sounds like is a completely different discussion. But how do I use my bitcoins to make a purchase?
Well, you have to go to a bitcoin exchange. And at that exchange, they will take your bitcoins in and then transfer money to you. And it could be over PayPal, or they'll send you cash or something like that. I'm not going to be the expert there.
Right.
But at the exchanges, that's how you, kind of like when you go to another country, you exchange it for the current currency. Well, you can take your bitcoins in Europe, exchange them for euros, or in the US, you can exchange them for US dollars.
So my guess is you have to be pretty techie to be someone that accepts a direct bitcoin payment.
Yes, you need to have the, what is it, the wallet, the Bitcoin wallet, and then you do a transfer, kind of like in PayPal where you log in.
Uh-huh.
So you send part of your algorithm to the person who's buying them, and then they can verify it, and then when the transaction's done, it goes out to the network saying, hey, this person transferred this to this person.
So I can't just call the pizza place and give them my 10,000 Bitcoins on the phone.
No, you can't really swipe a coin or a card or something like that.
But you could, in theory, in the future, right?
Right.
That's what they're hoping for.
That's what they're hoping for. Because it's a virtual transaction, just like a credit card, for instance. Your card has your account number on it, and when somebody runs the card, they can go to your account and make a debit transaction and pull some money out for you.
So we talked a little bit about the value of the American dollar being based on the United States. So I'm guessing that some of the value of a Bitcoin would be sort of the opposite, right? It's not taxable. It's not really tied to any specific government.
Well, the government doesn't regulate it because it doesn't realize or recognize that it's a real currency. So they see it as being kind of like hacker play money, or, you know, monopoly money on the internet.
Sort of like doing business with PayPal today.
Yeah, something like that. And it has sparked a lot of seedy transactions. So like people that want to buy stuff on Kim.com's mega upload thing. Yeah, he was taking Bitcoins for that. There's people that have Bitcoin wallets and they want to buy hardware, you know, computer hardware. You can make an exchange using Bitcoins. And that is really the thought that you are giving something physical for something virtual with the idea that it's going to be worth a certain amount of money. But if somebody dumps 10,000 bitcoins, the price is going to drop.
Right, hence that big fluctuation. And my guess is that that doesn't happen very often, but when it does, because there's such a limited amount, it has a fairly large impact.
Right, and if somebody's buying in at $92 and it fluctuates or crashes down to 50, just like in a stock, you know, you've lost your total investment, so there's really no reason to sell it. And that's one reason that the price keeps going back up.
So I'm intrigued a little bit by the lack of oversight, because it sounds to me like that could lead to a fairly untraceable transaction.
Well, and that's really the challenge for government regulators and whatnot, because it's an international currency. So there's really no way to tell if somebody's using bitcoins to buy arms out of Iran,
right,
or buying a nuclear weapon from the Soviet Union, because there's no way to trace it. But you can track the physical aspect of it, what it bought. And, you know, you can do that with real money anyway. But since our money is being regulated by the feds, they can track that when the transaction actually happened. Now, I've also mentioned that this is a virtual currency.
Right.
Well, one of the other things that came in the news recently was a physical Bitcoin.
Oh, so you could actually have, you know, like a Bitcoin quarter or something in your pocket?
Yes, which doesn't make much sense, really, because it's a virtual currency. So what are you going to, you know, you're not going to take this coin down to the 7-Eleven and buy something.
Right.
So it's almost like a trinket, right?
Well, it's sort of like buying those crazy collector's coins on late night TV, right?
Yeah, I think so, really.
Maybe.
The thing that got me thinking about this was, the U.S. government has been criticized a lot about just freely printing money to spark people to spend more.
Yeah, and I would agree that that's definitely a gray area.
The government's printing money all the time because it wears out in our wallets. Now, they're printing excess money, and that's what people are criticizing because it's flooding the market and it's lowering inflation. Well, it's raising inflation by making more money. It does some weird, funky financial thing that is above my head.
Right, but ultimately it lowers the value of the dollar because the scarcity is changed.
Exactly. Now, this engineer has printed his own Bitcoin, and he gives them out in different denominations, like one Bitcoin, 25 Bitcoins, and then there's a two-factor one that I think is worth like 100 Bitcoins.
Well, that would certainly keep you safe from those viruses and virtual crashes that we sometimes hear about.
Except that you have to buy them with Bitcoins.
Oh, okay.
So you still have to have a wallet, and somehow you have to get the coins in your wallet to buy this coin from him, in which turn you're giving your coins to him, and you're getting basically the same value plus a coin, a physical coin.
Sure, but by the same token, to reverse the exchange, someone would have to want your physical coin, or you'd have to exchange it back through this dude. That sounds kind of familiar, actually.
Yeah, it seems a little weird. And what's to stop him from not printing too many coins? You know, maybe he has 30,000 of these things printed somewhere. All of a sudden, he's flooding the Bitcoin market with fake virtual money of sorts.
Yeah, and again, that sounds a lot familiar, like the discussion we just had of the old American dollar. I mean, really, when you put that much power in one person, you are really banking on the good faith and trust of Mr. Bitcoin.
Exactly. And he's going to get Bitcoin rich off of this, and I will have just a trinket, which, you know, he didn't use Bitcoins to make the Bitcoins.
Right.
So where did they come from? Well, they came out of his pocket somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't just take $35, make a transaction over the web, and buy this coin that is really Bitcoins.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I have to confess, having one of these things has a certain appeal because I could say, look, this is a Bitcoin. But you buy the Bitcoin using Bitcoins, but there's no guarantee really of the value.
Nope. It's only backed by however many people don't want to sell their Bitcoins.
Well, they look cool.
They do look cool. And I wanted to buy one until I found out that I had to have Bitcoins. And then it's like, well, I'd have to go to exchange, and then I have to get them like $100, and then they would give me some coins, and then I would go and spend them, and now I'm like, what am I going
to
do with this?
Well, it certainly seems like there would be some sort of at least collectability to it. I'm a little bit surprised you can't just buy one outright. But that sort of makes sense because someone somewhere has to control the exchange. Are Bitcoins the future, or just a passing novelty? Or are we just looking at purchasing your Bitcoin equivalent of a Bradford exchange plate? We'll find out.
One of the reasons we build such insane machines is not just to show off, but to play some games.
That's right. I mean, what are we without now gaming and overclocking?
Well, and truth be told, you do need to unwind after a while.
Yes.
And, you know, I would say overclocking is stressful, but it really isn't. But, you know, when you get done pouring some liquid nitrogen for 4 hours, it's nice to sit down with a game and just kind of unwind for a bit.
Exactly. And I mean, these machines are expensive. Why not play games?
Yeah. So what have you been playing lately?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you ask that because we've talked a lot about games and
Borderlands mostly.
Particularly Borderlands lately. And the truth be told is I think that you would agree that Borderlands has kind of gotten a little stagnant.
Even though they are coming out with a new character and the fourth DLC, you know, and the third playthrough.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We talked about that last time. It's like, you know, they didn't change the game. It's just another difficulty level, and you can't just jump to that difficulty level. Blah, blah, blah. We've talked about this before.
So rather than rehash Borderlands 2, I also have kind of gone back to playing a little bit of Dungeon Defenders. Mm-hmm. But as we've talked about before, that's sort of become just a solitaire, relaxing time suck for me.
Don't you come home at lunch and start the game and then go back to work?
Yeah, ironically, that's a sad statement because I do enjoy the game, but it's gotten to the point now where I can set up what's called a survival match, which is a game that runs up to 30 or 35 levels. And I can build my build in about 15 minutes while I'm eating a burrito or whatever at home, and then walk away. And when I get home from work, just see if it survived to the end. And that's kind of cool, but also shows you kind of where I'm at with that game, and that is kind of looking for the next one to get me excited.
Yeah. So what have you bought lately?
I'm glad you asked. So I've talked a little bit about Path of Exile, and of course that's still on my list, although I have kind of not hit that as much as I'd like. Mm-hmm. So I've been out looking for something new, and there have been some really great bundles, so you should definitely be watching for bundles. And in one of those this week, I got some cool stuff, including some EA games, which is sort of unusual. I got a Need for Speed game. I don't think it's the most recent one.
Is that for the PC?
Uh-huh.
Well, okay.
And it also came with Mass Effect 2, which is a game that I've kind of circled around before, but have never purchased.
I want to say we've talked about that before, and it's interesting you bring up Mass Effect 2, because recently there was a super, super sale on Mass Effect, the trilogy. I want to say it was for $12.
Oh, and that is a good deal. Now, I got my bundle for about $7, and it just shows that if you watch, bundles are good. So I haven't played it yet. I've kind of added that to my list, along with I picked up Dishonored, which I'm kind of looking forward to. And I've been trying to find some time to get back to the Warhammer Space Marine. So those are all on my list this week. I just need to find a little time to get into it. But what I have been playing, you'll get a kick out of this, is on my PlayStation 3, I picked up Injustice, which is the new Marvel superhero game.
Oh, I have heard about that.
I picked that up because I haven't had a game really that I could play around my kids for a while, and my son is now getting into his superhero phase. So he plays a lot of Skylander still, but he likes to watch Batman and Spider-Man and these guys fight. And of course, it's very family friendly. And I don't think it's out on the PC. If it is, it's probably not that big a deal because consoles are made for fighting games.
That's very true.
So that's what I'm playing. Now, you mentioned Mass Effect, but what are you playing?
Well, I haven't had a lot of time to play games, and I have to admit that just because I did buy the Mass Effect trilogy, and I fired it up and was immediately disappointed.
Oh, no!
Well, you know, when we had talked about Mass Effect before, I knew that it was a console game, and originally I wrote it off because it was a console only when it first came out.
And I got the impression that this was a spiritual successor to, like, the BioShock-style games.
And I want to say it is because it's a role-playing game. It's a single-player role-playing game, which is the genre that I love. As I was mentioning before, I wrote it off initially because it was a console only. And I didn't really want to play a game that was designed for the console and then ported to the PC. Well, part of the console genre is that you never have a true first-person shooter. And that's the other genre that I like.
So is this an over-the-shoulder sort of view?
I want to say it's a combined over-the-shoulder third-person view. So you get to see your character.
So not your, you know, overhead Diablo-esque sort of thing, then?
No, it's not. It's not an isometric at all.
Okay.
And your character is always on the left-hand side of the screen. So when you're shooting, it's like a first-person shooter, but then your left eye is blocked because you can't see anything's going on over there.
Interesting.
Now, I did get to play the first one and part of the second one. I didn't make it very far, just through maybe 2 or 3 levels, just to kind of get the feel for the game.
So I have a huge gamer friend that I work with that swears by these games, but what he talks up is the storyline.
The story is amazing. It's one of those that, well, I should step back a little bit.
Okay.
The story is amazing, but you make it amazing. But the thing that I've noticed is that it's still on rails in terms of the story progression, kind of like in Borderlands where you go through one thing and there's dialogue to lead you into the other one. Well, with Mass Effect, you get to choose how you answer a question.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would be like if you answer in an angry tone, they'll spout off their dialogue, and then you'll get this apologetic return or another angry return.
Interesting.
But then if you play it again and you do like the, I'm the super nice person, then you'll get a nice response. So you get to choose how you want the dialogue to play out.
Now, I know there was an awful lot of downloadable content.
And the trilogy that I have has the downloadable content for the first and second edition, but not the third edition. And the third edition is a little weird because, if I read it correctly, it allows you to do multiplayer co-op.
Interesting.
So you could actually play with me. just get online and we could run through the story in a two-person sort of mode.
Yeah, but that sounds actually kind of cool.
I think it will be once I get to the third one. I really want to play, since I got all three, I really want to play through the first one and the second one. Just to get the story and the story background.
And my buddy Chris, of course, has recommended the same thing to me, knowing that I just picked up the second one. I sort of felt like, well, maybe the first one's a little dated. I mean, this is not a really recent game.
To that point, I was trying to figure out, you know, before I started up the game, as I was waiting for it to download, I pulled up a video, and there was some gaming network that was doing the 24 hours of Mass Effect.
Oh, okay.
And they were playing through all of them. They were going to start with the first one, but then what they did is they actually started with the second one. And I was like, well, why are you starting with the second one? I said, well, they have a backstory. You start in the second one, it has a backstory of what happened in the first one.
Oh, so that's not such a bad thing then. Yeah, that makes me feel better.
Yeah, so you don't necessarily have to play the first one. You can start with the second one.
So we need to talk a little bit about the delivery system, because this is not a Steam game.
It's not a Steam game. It came down off of Origin. And I want to say I bought the key from Green Man Games or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I like Green Man Games, actually. They're really good, although I'm told that if you don't use PayPal, it can get a little weird. So
yeah,
if you're listening, there's my recommend.
And I took that recommend, and it was a flawless transaction.
Fantastic. Now, I do want to point out that some of the games, I think the first one and the second one, are available occasionally on Steam, but the third one is only available through the Origin delivery system.
If you want to keep them together, my recommend, if you're going to get at least one, get the trilogy, because that's going to get you all the DLC. And if you only get the one game, you won't get the DLC.
Yeah, that sounds like a good recommend. In fact, I might not register my key and look for a trilogy myself, because my buddy Chris and now you have both recommended the playthrough from the beginning, or at least two to three combined. And I do know that at least when three first came out, there was a lot of talk about the ending being very controversial and very shocking.
Well, wasn't that the second one, though?
Was that the second one?
I want to say it's the second one, because if I remember the story right, it was originally released, and then they did something crazy, like they killed off the main character or something.
Gosh.
I don't know. But it was very...
It's not a spoiler. We're just guessing.
I have no idea what it is. And I would really like to see the original ending and then see what they changed, because they released a patch that changed the ending.
Very interesting. So all this discussion aside, how does it look? How does it play? What's your capsule review?
I'm going to say that it plays like a first-person shooter, even though it's a over-the-shoulder third-person. It's not the genre that I like, but after playing it for about an hour, I got accustomed to it. So I think I'm going to be able to play this game all the way through.
And the storyline? Pulls you in?
The storyline is very engaging, as long as you don't get lost. It's not one of those on-the-rails games, which is something that I also really like. But it doesn't have a lot of graphics either, at least in the first one, because it's 5 years old. So as you're going around, you get the idea of where you need to go.
Right.
But if you don't, you know, your character's always on the left. And if you need to turn left, you may not know the path is to the left. So it's one of those learning things. And I mentioned this before with Borderlands 2, where when I first fired it up, it's like, well, a weapon dropped. What is that weapon? And now I can just look at it. Oh, that's a piece of junk. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing is true with Mass Effect. You have, I want to say, you can break a chest and then it has some sort of essence in there. And you can convert that essence into health regeneration or into like bullets or something. I haven't really figured that part out yet, but...
Well, I have to say, I'm a bit intrigued. I think this is going to move a little bit higher up my list there. I certainly have, as you know, a massive back catalog. And with the recent bundle releases, it just seems to keep growing.
Yeah. Well, and that is the problem with buying games on Steam. I want to say Penny Arcade did a comic about it.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, and I think it was Gabe was on there just saying that he was buying games on Steam for the fact of buying games or something.
I know, they're just so cheap, I feel like I just have to buy them. And I have to confess, on that note, I finally broke down and bought myself a Windows-compatible controller for some of those games that are a little sketchy on the mouse. And I know that Steam is really pressing towards that whole TV controller experience, so I wanted to check that out as well. So some of the games might get a little play that I would have otherwise ignored.
Well, to that point, and this will probably be the end of this, Skyrim Legend, or Legendary Skyrim or something like that, the Legendary Edition of Skyrim, is coming out for the PC that has all the DLC and the main game. And you'd mentioned before that you always bought those games on the console.
I did, yes.
So you could play them on the TV. Well, now you can have that console experience on your PC.
and I sure would like to get the mods. Does
the mods.
I like the mods, the textures, that sort of stuff. Especially on Skyrim, there's some amazing ones. But on Just Cause, any chance that those will be updated on the first or second or any user content?
I'm not sure, to be honest, but we'll find out.
Exactly. So we'll have to get back to you on that, let you know what gets our attention as we go into summer. And of course, watch for those Steam bundles and summer sales because they just keep coming.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes. If you have questions, drop by the forums or email us at podcast@ninjalane.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Ninja Lane by subscribing to our RSS, now available on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, or join us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2013. Thanks for listening.